This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. 50 years ago today, the Supreme Court heard final arguments in the landmark legal case of Brown versus Board of Education. The following May, the court ruled that separate public schools for black and white children are unconstitutional. NPR News is beginning a series of reports exploring the legacy of the Brown decision. Over the coming year, we'll hear how it has affected schools and neighborhoods across the country. Today, NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams reports on the man who led the fight that continues to rock race relations in the United States.
But the story begins even before Thurgood Marshall came on the scene. It begins in 1922 with a gift. $100,000 was pledged to the NAACP to explore strategies to give the, quote, Southern Negro his constitutional rights. The money came from Charles Garland, the heir to a mining fortune.
He became a radical when he was in college and decided the money that his family left him was tainted with the blood of the workers who had been in the mines.
Mark Tushnet is a law professor at Georgetown University Law School.
He actually wanted to turn down the inheritance entirely, but was persuaded by his family's lawyers to take it and then create this fund for public service.
With the money, the NAACP planned a legal strategy to challenge school segregation. They brought in the dean of Howard University Law School, Charles Hamilton Houston. He zeroed in on the disparities between black schools and white schools. Houston decided it was too slow and expensive to file suit against school segregation in every school district of every state. Instead, he searched out specific cases where black schools could easily be shown to be inferior to white schools. Lewis Pollock, now a federal judge in Philadelphia, worked with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
The Supreme Court's prevailing doctrine in Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896 was, quotes, separate but equal. When you translate that over to the school situation, when school systems were developed on a dual basis in the South, legislatures spent three-quarters, four-fifths, nine-tenths of their education money on the white schools, and the notion that there was any equality in those separate institutions was a bizarre kind of statement.
Enter Thurgood Marshall, the tall, wavy, black-haired lawyer who left a lasting impression on Lewis Pollock.
Fast-moving, likely to be a cigarette dangling out of his mouth, marvelous, vibrant sense of humor, ease in dealing with people, strongly opinionated, always in command.
Marshall had seen segregation his entire life. Born in 1908, he saw his mother teach kindergarten in all-black schools in Baltimore, where she earned far less by law than white teachers in the city. After college, Marshall wanted to go to law school at the University of Maryland, but the school did not accept blacks. Norma Marshall pawned her wedding ring to pay for her son to attend the historically black law school at Howard University. The dean of the law school was a Harvard-trained lawyer named Charles Hamilton Houston. He became a powerful influence on Marshall's life. Kurt Schmoke, the current dean of Howard Law School, describes Houston's drive to end segregation.
He created the first civil rights curriculum of any law school in the United States. Charles Hamilton Houston said that a lawyer was either a social engineer or a parasite on society. He inspired these people, including Thurgood Marshall and many others, to look at social life, in particular education, that they could start whittling away at segregation. And that's what led to the five different cases that ultimately became known as Brown versus Board.
2 years after graduating from law school, Marshall won a suit forcing the very same University of Maryland to integrate because the state did not have a law school for blacks. Houston died in 1950. But Marshall took the legal crusade to new heights. He overcame concerns among black teachers by telling them he would protect their jobs if school integration ended black schools. NAACP leaders around the country suggested school segregation cases in South Carolina, Virginia, Delaware, Kansas, and the District of Columbia. As an assistant at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Jack Weinstein, now a federal judge, got to watch Marshall in whirlwind action, preparing cases and drawing on legal talent from law schools and law firms across the country.
He presided and pulled them together with an enormous skill in handling people that I've never seen duplicated. He would not hesitate to use blackface comedy, derogatory words about whites or blacks or whatever would move the work forward.
As the Brown arguments approached, Marshall gathered law professors and students in New York and at Howard University to prepare. Howard University Law School Dean Kurt Schmoke.
They would go through the entire argument with briefs and have professors here, and they would have students in the audience listening and raising questions. And so some of the toughest questions that Thurgood Marshall ever got came from Howard law students in those mock trials.
The Supreme Court held its first argument on the case in 1952, but the court, instead of deciding the case, asked for additional research on what Congress intended when it wrote the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The justices also wanted to hear how to carry out school integration. Jack Greenberg and other lawyers joined Marshall for the December 1953 re-argument.
The courtroom was packed, long lines outside waiting to get in. The rule was that if you got up to leave, you couldn't come back into the courtroom, so people, you know, were kind of stuck there. They were hungry and had to go to the bathroom, but they wouldn't move because they wanted to hear the argument.
Marshall argued school segregation was a violation of individual rights under the 14th Amendment. The justices of the court did not seem to be moved. In 1989, I had extensive interviews with Marshall for a biography. He said after his unsteady performance before the Supreme Court, he watched as the opposing counsel, John W. Davis, cried tears of sadness while arguing that racially separate schools serve the needs of ill-educated blacks. Davis said it was foolish to discard those schools for the uncertain social experiment of bringing black and white children together. Robert Carter, who was another NAACP lawyer, watched with disgust.
What he was saying was that we should be satisfied with our status quo, and we were being greedy by trying to do better. This is a generalized white supremacy argument.
The last day of the three-day argument, Marshall was more forceful. He argued that the only justification for continuing segregated schools was to keep people who were slaves, quote, as near that stage as possible. 5 months after the re-argument, Marshall got a tip. Be at the Supreme Court on Monday, May 17, 1954. He was in the High Court as Chief Justice Earl Warren read aloud, quote, we conclude unanimously that in the field of public education, the doctrine of separate but equal has no place. Marshall told two lawyers in court with him that day, quote, we hit the jackpot. Constance Baker Motley, an NAACP lawyer, was in the New York office that day when Marshall returned from D.C.
Well, of course, we were overjoyed, is putting it mildly. The decision, I think, came down at 10. Of course, there was nothing but partying from then on until 3 o'clock the next morning. I do remember that.
Almost 25 years later, in a 1978 speech at Howard University, Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall warned against complacency when it comes to racial segregation in the United States.
There are people that tell us today, take it easy, man. You made it. But again, I remind you of what Charlie Houston said. You got to be better, boy. Be careful of these people who say, you've made it. Take it from me, it has not been solved. You can't stand still. You must move. And if you don't move, they will run over you.
Marshall, who served as a Supreme Court justice from 1967 to 1991, died in 1993. Juan Williams, NPR News.
Historic photos from Thurgood Marshall's career and extended interviews with Jack Weinstein, Lewis Pollack, and Constance Baker Motti are at npr.org.